Hey, my friend, welcome along to the Nutrition Nuggets podcast, helping you get clarity on nutrition. I'm your host, Dale Pinnock, Sunday Times best-selling author, nutritionist, and creator of the Culinary Medicine College. Every episode here in the podcast, we dig deep on the subject of nutrition to give you clarity, to give you answers, and to expand your knowledge. If you've got a family history of type 2 diabetes, or if you're concerned that maybe your current diet and lifestyle might be leading you down that path, there's 10 key things that you can focus on to improve things a little bit, to hedge your bets, 10 key areas to reduce your risk of developing this condition. The first one, and the most obvious, and I'm sorry if this kind of makes it sound like I'm teaching you how to suck eggs, but it's just to get whole with your diet. Don't worry about removing food groups or getting too fancy with any kind of diet that you're following. Just build your diet around whole foods. That means fruit, veg, nuts, seeds, whole grains, healthy proteins, healthy fats. As long as those are the focal point of your diet, you are hedging your bets in many ways. And this kind of brings me on to the next two recommendations. The second being reduce hidden sugars. You're probably thinking, well, no shit, Sherlock, but it's amazing how some of these hidden sugars can creep into our daily diet. When you're looking at a food label, how do you even know they're in there? Well, with some of the more obvious foods like confectionery and that kind of stuff, you're blatantly going to see sugar on the ingredients list. But when it comes to some of the day-to-day staples, the condiments and other things that we have in our kitchens, they can be slightly less obvious when we're looking at the label. So if you see any kind of syrup, cut it out. Fructose syrup, corn syrup, rice syrup, those kinds of things. It's sugar. It might be dressed up as being a natural sugar, but it's sugar. People often say to me, aren't natural sugars much better for you? It's like, well, opium is natural heroin. It doesn't make it a good idea. Be aware of those. The other thing to look out for on labels is anything that ends with O's. So fructose, maltose, dextrose, these are all added sugars. And if you're trying to cut them out and you see that on the label, keep away from that food. And then the third thing really is an extension of that. Minimize your intake of processed food. Not only will they have hidden sugars in abundance, they also tend to be very high in trans fats, very, very high in omega-6 fatty acids that have that pro-inflammatory effect. Loads of salt. All sorts of preservatives. They really don't put you in a particularly good position when it comes to long-term metabolic health. The next thing to be aware of is portion control. Now, I'm not one of those people that tries to encourage people to weigh everything that they're eating and to count calories and count macros and that kind of stuff, because I think it can lead to very destructive habits. But do be aware of the amounts of food that are on your plate. There's a general rule that I always guide people towards. It's like every time you look at your plate, if quarter of the plate is filled with a slow-burning carbohydrate, so brown rice instead of white rice, multigrain pasta instead of white pasta, a quarter of your plate is filled with a healthy protein, whether that's fish, meat, eggs, dairy, or tofu or tempeh, and then half of your plate filled with non-starchy vegetables. As long as you're portioning things up like that, you're always going to be creating a meal that has a far more favorable metabolic impact, meaning that it's going to take longer to digest, it takes longer to liberate its glucose, so your blood sugar is drip fed, and also it keeps you feeling fuller for longer as well. The next thing to think about, which kind of relates to what I've just said, is make sure that you have a focus on high fiber foods. As long as you're building your diet around whole foods, this should be really, really easy. So high fiber foods, make sure you go for whole grains instead of refined grains. So for your rice, brown rice instead of white. Pasta, multigrain instead of the white. Using things like quinoa and pearl barley and all of your vegetables. Any high fiber food is going to have some fantastic knock-on effects for long-term metabolic health. Firstly, as I discussed, those high-fiber foods take far longer to digest, so that means they liberate their glucose more slowly. Also, they stimulate the production of satiety hormones, things like peptide YY, for example, that can really help to stabilize our appetite and keep our diet across the day much healthier. Also, these high fiber foods help to support the growth and development of a healthy microbiome, which in itself has a multitude of benefits to long-term metabolic health. Next thing to consider, which ties in again to that example I gave of a perfect plate, is always make sure that every single meal contains a high quality protein, a good protein source. This could be oily fish. Get the oily fish in because you want those long chain omega-3 fatty acids, or chicken or tofu or tempeh, whatever. Just make sure every single meal you look at the plate and you can see there is protein present. Now, the next one to think about, which probably isn't immediately obvious when we think about metabolic health, is hydration. Now, hydration is vitally important for a million and one different reasons. So important for long-term good health, important for focus, important for energy levels, important for weight management. It's vital. But it's also vital for maintaining good metabolic health. One of the things that happens if we are dehydrated, our blood glucose concentration does tend to go up. Plasma volume reduces, so the actual watery portion of our blood reduces, and as such, glucose concentration can be higher. And this can start to affect glucose sensitivity in the long run. How much water do we need to drink? Well, I want you to ignore all of these arbitrary recommendations in terms of, drink 8 glasses a day or 3 liters a day, whatever. These are completely arbitrary and it varies from individual to individual. Thankfully, your body has got the best indication system as to whether you are adequately hydrated. All you got to do is drink water until your pee runs clear. At that stage, stop drinking. As soon as it starts to get some color back to it, drink some more water until it starts to run clear again, then stop. As long as you're at that point, you're maintaining that point where it's just running clear, it's only got a tiny little tinge to it, you're at the point of hydration. Any more than that, you do run the risk of potentially leaching water-soluble nutrients from the body like electrolytes, B vitamins, vitamin C. So follow that recommendation. You'll always be at the point of hydration. The next thing is make sure that you have healthy fats in your diet. Get your fat straight is what I always say to people. Now, I'm not saying avoid saturated fat and go on low-fat diets or anything like that. I don't buy into that messaging whatsoever. But you do need to be aware of the kind of fats that you're consuming, particularly as they relate to inflammation. What I want you to reduce and cut out are seed-based oils. So sunflower oil, vegetable oil, corn oil, margarines, anything like that. Put them in the bin, get rid of them, never go near them again. This is because they contain very, very high levels of something called omega-6. Omega-6, this is a group of fatty acids that we need, but only in tiny, tiny amounts. When we take in more than we need, that excess will be converted into compounds called series 2 prostaglandins that switch on and worsen inflammation. Why does that matter? Well, increased inflammatory loads in the body can damage the cardiovascular system, can increase risks of cancers, can cause all kinds of damage. But in the context of things like type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome, inflammation can actually reduce the effectiveness of the insulin receptor. The insulin receptor is the thing that that receives the insulin signal, opens the glucose transporter on the cell surface, allowing our cells to take up glucose, bringing blood glucose down within a healthy range. Low-grade inflammation can actually make those receptors less effective. So reducing your intake of those kind of fats. And then on the flip side of that, I want you to increase your intake of omega-3 fatty acids, particularly the long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, EPA and DHA. You find these in oily fish like salmon, mackerel, herrings, or grass-fed meats. If you follow a plant-based diet, you absolutely must go for a supplement, because in plants, omega-3 exists in the form of ALA. That's what you get in like flax seeds and chia seeds and walnuts and those kinds of foods. Our body's not that good at actually converting ALA into EPA and DHA. Yeah, you're going to get a small percentage of conversion, but not much. The easiest thing to get you anywhere near the kind of dosage range that you need to have a significant impact is taking a supplement that's made from algae that contains both EPA and DHA. So you've got brands like Viridian and Solgar and BioCare as well that do great options there. So then the final thing to think about is limit alcohol intake. Alcohol in excess can be extremely damaging for the simple reason that it does increase free radical stress, oxidative stress. It increases production of free radicals. So it can send your blood pressure up. It can damage blood vessels. But in the context of type 2 diabetes, it tends to have a massive glucose load. And your body will prioritize metabolizing, breaking down, and excreting alcohol above metabolizing and utilizing nutrients from your food. So if you've been drinking alcohol and then you consume a meal, your body's not going to be that effective at actually dealing with like the glucose and the postprandial lipemia and all the other things that happen after you've consumed that meal. And that can, in the long term, drive visceral fat accumulation. Visceral fat accumulation can increase your risk of type 2 diabetes. So whilst a little bit in moderation absolutely can be perfectly fine, being mindful of the amount that you consume is very, very important. So look, a lot of these things I've talked about should be common sense. But if you focus on those key things, on whole foods, on healthy protein sources, on healthy fats, in the right combination, build your diet around all of that, you put yourself in the best possible position to minimize your risk of developing type 2 diabetes over a long period of time.